Tom brought me back in. When I said I was opening up the books a couple of weeks ago, things got a little crazy. Now I'm sitting here with Tom at a diner with the baseball cap pulled low. I'm on a Zoom call. He hired an Uber driver to pat me down before I sat down in the stall by myself. Tom, welcome back. Welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me, Will. It's nice to see you. I'm sitting in a Waffle House in my Zoom call.
This guy goes down south. He's hanging out at a Waffle House like it's Starbucks all of a sudden. I love it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
I drove past a Waffle House Friday night, and I could not believe how packed it was.
Driving past the Waffle House on a Friday night is the responsible decision, Tom. That is what a grown man with a family at home does.
Yep.
I'm proud of you.
Right past it.
That's growth. That is not what my bands do on tour or ever, regardless of what I say. We get the hotel. If we see a hotel next to a Waffle House, everyone's like yo. Everyone's acting like we scored.
I guess that's the thing. Like, I remember when I was on the road a few times, Waffle House was just the coolest shit, especially coming from Long Island.
Like, yeah,
it was so affordable. It's open all the time, and it's just like,
it's
so greasy, like perfectly calorie dense.
Yeah.
And now that I'm around it all the time, I've become desensitized.
Let me straighten this out. I have nothing against the Waffle House as an eating establishment and the fine people that work there, but there's a lot of mischief, a lot of little fidgety stuff going on after hours. We went to the last tour we were on, we like plugged in a Waffle House on whatever the map thing was on the whatever app, and it brought us to a Waffle House. There was people there, and it was like a couple of nice cars, and there was a security guard that came up to us and very politely told us, "Hey man, you can't come in here. There's another Waffle House, right down the road." And he gave us the address real quick. Like, he had been doing it to other people, kicking people out. I think somebody had maybe rented out a private Waffle House for the night.
Honestly, I know, like, down in Atlanta, I know, like, Big Boy from Outkast, like, he still goes.
Yeah.
Pretty frequently. Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised if it was some rapper who just wanted to have a little quiet time.
That's like if I could rent out Little V's in Huntington, bro.
Good luck.
Speaking of rowdy guys, fidgety guys, that would be a little nuts too, man. We got that's the thing, we got that culture here right here in Long Island at Little Vinny's. Little V's in Ronkonkoma is a family establishment. Did you have the fine privilege of attending both places?
Never went to the one that you're referring to, which you're deeming respectful a family establishment. I went to the one, the hole in the wall, frat armpit, which I do eat the food. I think the food's fine there.
Yeah.
It's signature, that's for sure. But yeah, the fights there, man. Oh my God.
Little Visa Ronkonkoma is a family establishment. It's like where Tony Soprano gets clipped allegedly at the end. It's like that type of restaurant.
Gotcha.
Beautiful. Love them. Speaking of Huntington, I'm going to see Queensryche and Armored Saint in a few days. That's why I'm a little jumpy right now.
That got served to me, some email. I saw Queensryche was playing. I thought of you, Big Will. I was like, he's going.
In Huntington, I can't not go. I mean, I'm here. I'm actually going to a show tonight. And I have to drive to Shaker's Pub on Long Island. I don't have to leave Suffolk County to go to a show. And still, my middle-aged brain was like, oh, boy, got to get in the car. Yeah, I'm actually, if I make it there, I'm going to see Groaning Wretch, who we interviewed them, and the show came out a week or two ago, and Tar, and Roots of Deception, and Burrito Bowl, and Servant of Sorrow, all at Shaker's Pub tonight, man. I'm heading out there as soon as we're done. We might be doing this thing that we're doing to blockade the podcast up, and I'll be in like my car driving by the end of the episode tonight. We'll see what
happens.
You'll
be leaving a voicemail.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to stop drinking allegedly. What else? We got something going on, Tom. I got something fun.
Tell me.
For the listeners, I guess mainly for the listeners in the United Kingdom. This is, you know, it's open for everybody, but you're going to find out why. I'm not getting paid. I'm not getting compensated or, you know, but I did a little deal here. You go to 783punx.com, 783punks.com, punks with an X, 783punks.com. Go over there. We got a little code. You order some stuff there. Give them the code heavy hole, one word, heavy hole. And you get a little deal, get a little discount off your order over there. I'm not even going to tell you what the discount is. Just go over there and look.
You just top loaded a podcast episode with an ad. That's great.
Yeah, I'm not getting paid, so it's not really an ad. I'm just kind of like, it's me naively supporting the scene.
Okay.
Me not thinking I'm naively supporting the scene and giving a break. But I ignored the message for a day or two, and then I looked at the website, because I get some come-ons in the messages. They actually do carry a wide variety of, like, tapes and vinyls and stuff of, like, shit we talk about on the podcast. They got, so if you're in the UK, you're looking for a couple of deep cuts and the old cassettes, man, go over there. Or if you're familiar with this, give them the old Heavy Hole promo code. I like that. Tom, when we stop recording later, you're going to maybe reel me in. Maybe that's why you reeled me in today. You can talk to me about why it's a bad idea for me to do this. But, I could get the discount too, I guess. So maybe I'm getting some sort of compensation in that way.
Yeah, man. Use it. Hold on one second. Someone's at my door now.
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
I'm leaving this in. Will, just talk.
Watch out. Tom, just say I'm not planning on killing myself before you go answer that door,
I'm
please.
I'm not going to kill myself, I promise.
Okay, Jesus. They're going to... Oh, God. All right, guys. I'm going to leave this running in real time. This is scary. This is... So go to the website. Order some tapes. They're over there in the United Kingdom for your people over there. I know a lot of you guys listen. We appreciate it. Tom's not back yet. This is kind of worrying me. He closed the door, so I'm just seeing his room there. This is, like, weird. I hope this isn't something that goes on the deep web at some point. I didn't even wish it was, it's administrative assistance day. I was going to get into a bit about that with him. I hope he comes back. So we got some guys tonight from the UK. Speaking of the UK, we're going to talk to them in a few minutes. We talked to Slime. Oh, there. Oh, jeez. This guy had me concerned. What's up, Tom?
Oh, nothing. That was it was an Amazon package.
You're safe.
I'm safe though. Blink
once if you're safe. Blink once if you're safe. Oh, okay.
Does this work?
It looked like you fell asleep for a second, so I don't know what that is.
I just want to do one exaggerated one.
Tom's gonna fall asleep for a second, but stay in the room. You got me concerned there while I talk to Slime Lord from the UK. All right. See, there was a little kind of thing there, man. Let's do it. From the Heavy Hole Podcast, and I'm here with returning guests Xander and Ryan of Slime Lord, who were here last time, more in the context of their other band Cryptic Shift. And I just want to say, if you're interested in some of their background and their history and their come up, so to speak, and the history of Cryptic Shift, you can go back and listen to our interview from October 2020. I can't believe it's been so long. But we're going to kind of pick up here, and I gave the guys the opportunity, of course, if there was anything we neglected to talk about in that past interview. But guys, Xander and Ryan, welcome back to the Heavy Hole Podcast.
Yo, what's good? Cheers for having us, man. Yo, Will, it's good to be back.
Absolutely, man. Good to have you. I had obviously noticed, like many other people, that the Slime Lord record had dropped recently, and you can't help but notice it when it pops up in social media with the artwork, but we're going to get to that. And I'm glad you guys reached out, because I was going to put you on the short list regardless. Let's get into it, though, because if I'm not mistaken, when I had you guys on a few years ago, we did touch on Slime Lord and the Delta Death Sirens EP from 2019. That was that had been out already, and I think you guys had then, since the last time we spoke, released the Insurmountable Peril EP, the Spells at Ismuth live album, and the Mass Contamination EP. So Slime Lord has kind of like developed its own life of its own beyond Cryptic Shift and beyond the context of that last interview, right?
Yeah, at that point, when did the last interview, Slime Lord had just been born, really. Only a few months ago, I think.
I'm pretty sure we were recording at that time in the main room at Boom, and we did it before a recording session, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, we were recording Mass Contamination, like, in and around that time in the same room where we did the last one, yeah. But I remember you mentioned Delta Death Sirens on, like, a recommendation on the end of one of your episodes. As like this, you know, new band Slime Lord from England. So that was like really cool to see Slime Lord pop up on the Heavy Hole, and a couple of years later, here we are with four EPs and an album. And all that.
Yeah, man. And I always want to encourage artists. If we there's so many demos and so many releases. Sometimes I might recommend something and not follow through or email the band themselves. If anybody ever hears a recommendation on Heavy Hope, feel free to reach out. Might take a little while for me to get back to you, but you're right. Here we are, and I want to the album. I'm gonna give my best attempt here. Chytrid Emyosis.
Chytridiomycosis.
Okay.
Chytridiomycosis. That's the gist.
Now it makes sense looking at it. Chytridiomycosis. You can imagine how much trouble I had in high school with lymphatic phlegm and disgorge from Mexico. But it's great. So I want to first credit my references. I watched your recent interviews with the Beaver Mosh YouTube channel and the Chill Dude on the Couch YouTube channel. Shout to him. So I know that there's a little bit of a story behind this word. It's not just a random word you picked out of some pathological dictionary, right?
Yeah, I mean, initially it was the really cool sounding word. I mean, just to look at it, the spelling and the letters, it's quite mesmerizing. But then, like, looking deeper into it, it's completely in the Slime Lord realm, being like an amphibian disease that infects frogs and toads, which Slime Lord are kind of obsessed with. And Andy, our singer's really into a lot of amphibian and conservation, and he's done like university courses on that. And he occasionally brings up like topics or words. And so it was like a perfect Slime Lord word to like get mesmerized by and then just go in and create a mental story around it.
And you guys did create quite a story around it. I've heard you go into it before, and I want you to touch on it here again. I feel like it, and a lot of it coincides with the artwork. So much with to go into right now. I spent the morning collecting my thoughts. The artwork itself is so detailed. I feel like it reflects the music in the way that the album necessitates multiple listens. The lyrics necessitate multiple reads. There's so much going on there, man. It's like a volume of media alone, you know, just outside of the concept of just being a musical album. This all goes back to 2019, including a lot of the writing, right?
Yeah. Let me think. Opening Beckoning Bell. That was like the latest one. That was 2021. We started jamming that. And Heroic Demise was 2020, the last one. But all the other ones are all from like original rehearsal tapes from 2019, which is like a funny thing looking back now, just because we have, when we first started jamming and discovered the Slime Lord sound, you know, it was right there in 2019 at the time. And yeah, we just go back, pick a rehearsal tape and right, that's what we're going to turn into a song now, you know, like years later.
It's not how all bands work, but there's something to it. I mean, you guys have, like I said, you guys have created this kind of like volume that's It has depth on multiple levels, from a visual aspect, from a listening aspect, from a lyrical aspect. It seems like you guys are almost, I want to draw a parallel here to writers and creators of the kind of science fiction media that has inspired this sort of thing, in the sense that you guys have, instead of volumes of notes and notebooks and half-written stories, you guys have these rehearsal tapes that you kind of keep around for years to embellish on and wait for the right inspiration and draw new things into. We haven't even gotten into the field recordings yet, but is that fair to say? Like, you guys are kind of keeping this the way you write about this fictitious crypt and tomb inside of this frog, you guys have a real-life crypt of music.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. Like, the room we're in right now, like, this is, like, our jam spot and stuff, and, like, this is just shared privately between Slime Lord and Cryptic Shift, and it's pretty much, like, where we stay all the whole time. I wish there was a bed here, but... Yeah, like, so it's kind of nice because, at least for myself and Xander, like, writing the Cryptic Shift stuff, it's always kind of been more of the complete opposite of what Slime Lord is. Like, you know, it's a lot more well thought out and, like, in-depth, and there's a lot of, like, draft work and stuff like that goes into it. So for us to be able to kind of, like, just get together with, like, some of the founding, Christian from Slime Lord, Andy from Slime Lord. This is those guys, like, first bands, you know, and stuff like that. We got John in on bass from Cryptic Shift all the time since he moved closer. But yeah, it was like, it's real nice to kind of, like, just do it that way, you know, like, we jam out, forget about it. Because it's like, we're working on the songs we're working on, but then we'll just jam just for the fun of it. Xander will record it. Then he's like coming to me like, remember that drum beat you played 2 years ago? This is the riff for it. I'm like, what? Like, no. And then he'll show me some recording, and I'm just like,
yeah, I'm like, yeah, the Slime Lord. Yeah. I'm like the Slime Lord archivist, and I keep archives of all the rehearsal tapes and have, like, a slight idea over time of, like, where these, like, songs and parts of songs could go, and yeah, and, like, unveil them years later, like, got a new song, but we kind of did 80% of it 3 years ago.
There's a different depth to that level of songwriting. I like it. Things stick around for years. They naturally have a fortitude to them for having stuck around, because there's obviously things that you don't use.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So, all right. And you mentioned, is it Andy Ashworth, your vocalist?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
You mentioned that he has an interest in, I guess, preservation, ecology, that sort of thing, and this is also reflected in the band?
Yeah, absolutely. That's where all the themes kind of started from. Like, years ago, just hanging out, chatting, and, like, a common theme was just talking about swamps and, like, the things Andy was studying at the time, and naturally that became, like, the vibe of Slime Lord, so... And then, like, coming from, like, Cryptic writing these, like, fantastical stories, it was just, like, a natural evolution to incorporate some of that depth and, like, layers into Slime Lord. With, like you mentioned, the album's got, like, the artwork, and then there's, like, the lyrics, and then there's a little, like, story segment in the inlay as well, where you can read, like, a little more directly about the adventure, whereas, like, the lyrics are... Like, each song is part of the adventure, but there's also, like, a deeper, like, theme embedded in it. And then of course, like, the music with all the different layers. But yeah, Andy brings a lot of the...
He's kind of just, like, stuff. He's the guy who's into that kind of thing more than anyone in the band. So that's kind of, like, what he brings to the most. You know, you'll, like, go around the guy's house and he'll be like, oh, I'm thinking about buying some amps. And you're like, right, cool. Like, you know, that's, which he has done in the past. And, like, yeah, like, just bonding over that stuff, especially before we were playing together in a band and stuff like that. Like, that's what we'd kind of, like, do for fun and, like, you know, talk about and stuff like that. And, like, especially, like, where we're from, it rains quite often, so... You know, there's mud everywhere, and yeah, going about, walking about, and just like hanging out in those kind of places. You know, like going where we used to go, like that. There's like a old Druid temple not too far from Leeds, and we used to always like go there and like smoke out and stuff like that. And that's like, yeah, just in the
yeah, it's a dynamic that just kind of works and like feeds off each other. Off Moss Contamination, the track Puddle Dweller. I mean, that was originally, I think my dad actually mentioned that like phrase to me. And I was like, that's ridiculous. And he was like, that should be a Slime Lord song title. And I'm like, that's insane. But like, it fits so well because puddles, I mean, that's all you see just walking around Leeds. And then thinking about like environmentalism, I was like, what if the puddle dweller is this piece of like litter or rubbish that's dwelling beneath the surface of the puddle and it's like mutated into some creature, this plastic bit of rubbish, and it's going to jump out and devour a passerby or something.
Kind of like a take on the old like troll under the bridge type of thing.
Oh yeah.
Well, I mean, right there, I feel like there is some sort of, and I've heard you guys speak in like I said, the aforementioned interviews about the content of the lyrics and the story behind this. I've also heard you speak in our prior interview about the story behind certain Cryptic Shift lyrics. I feel like there's, I mean, you obviously must have an appreciation for more traditional literature and for the tradition of like science fiction and fantasy, particularly I would say from your own country, right? Is that's fair to say?
Maybe not as much as you'd expect. I mean, I'm not like a connoisseur of a lot of this sort of stuff, but we are extremely fascinated by it, even though we're not like as well versed in literature as we are as like death metal or movies.
All right. Well, let me flip it on you like this then. Who, yeah, is it you, Xander? Am I correct in assuming you're the one who's doing a lot of this writing and drafting of the lyrics and the story, or is it more of a collaborative effort?
Yeah, me.
How long does this interest in writing go back? And forgive me if you might have already explained this a little bit to me a few years ago.
Yeah, that's an interesting way of putting it. Well, once Cryptic Shift was the, like, we did Beyond the Celestial Realms in, like, 2015. And that was, like, the first delving into thinking up stories and, like, oh, I can put it in a song we've written. That's really cool. And then just wanting to make the story really interesting and deep, and then just doing a lot of, like, background research on it. So it's all just come from there. And then in making like the Slime Lord lyrics, thematically wanting to put in like these swampy atmospheres and then all like the fantastical stuff, it comes from a lot of like probably like more like video games and movies. And I don't know, I don't generally think it's like a really specific influence. It's
I think it's more like what our connected like creation, like creative tendencies kind of grew towards as we got a bit more mature and stuff like that, to be honest with you, because I think especially with myself and Xander, we've been like playing together now like for the past 10 years since we were like 16 years old and stuff like that. So at least for our working relationship, I think it kind of just at some point, especially when the Cryptic Shift material started to develop a bit more depth to it around the time of when like Cosmic Dreams had come out and Visitations was been written. I think once we started to consider the idea of doing the concept records, and then with that, the importance of everything being so thematically like insane, symmetrical, and how everything has to be right. Like the Visitations from Enceladus artwork, we had drafts of other artworks before that from the artist that we had to decline because it just didn't feel the vibe. And I think, again, naturally with it being, you know, the first two Slime Lord EPs weren't conceptual, really. The songs themselves may have been, but the overall record wasn't. But I think for the, as far as like an LP a long play record, a full length release. We do like see that as like within itself, it's an overall like art piece, and it's more than just we want to create more than just like. Don't get me wrong, we've been in other bands where we have just created like, you know, like metal songs or even like punk and hardcore stuff. But for what Slime, and here's the thing as well, Slime Lord, funnily enough, was kind of like, oh, this will be a fun band where we can just jam out instead of having to come up with all this conceptual stuff. But I guess we can't really keep away from it. So I guess it just kind of naturally ended up becoming more of a, this is just kind of what we do. And now, like, it's interesting because when it comes to like, the next Slime Lord record, for example, it's like, where do we even begin with that? Do we start with the music, or do we need to think of what kind of theme we want to go with in order to then, how does the music go from there? It's pretty cool, man. It's pretty cool. I like that we work this way as well. You know, it makes things exciting, and it's cool, man.
Yeah, and with literary influences, I don't necessarily know many like very British ones, but I think you know, like the old fighting fantasy, Ian Livingstone, and forget the other guy. He might have been British, but like those fighting fantasy adventure books. Those were always good fun as a kid, but I'd say like images are mainly the most captivating thing when it comes to like writing the lyrics. Just seeing,
seeing the record as a film, like
I see
stuff
like
that. And like,
or like playing like video games and coming across a specific environment, some like view that's a spectacle. That's the stuff like clicks with me. Or
yeah, that's where the influence definitely comes from.
And then with this Slade Slime Lord album, a lot of old school movie posters like Sinbad and the Seventh Voyage, Mysterious Island, what's the other one? Those like old kind of triptych posters where you just have a bunch of creatures on the front cover of like this poster. And even though they don't all appear all at once in the movie, they're all there on the poster, each like element, and you know, all these weird creatures.
Okay. Yeah, a lot there. What I was getting at, respectfully, was just how much goes into the lyrics and goes into the subject matter of the band. And I think you just explained that. The idea of video games influencing bands and influencing media nowadays is something that I've had to come to really respect. And you know, video games nowadays, it's a lot. I'm of a little bit older generation, but that's not even an excuse. There's people my age that are gamers, but it's almost more in depth than what we get sometimes from the movie theaters and from other, you know, more contemporary, you know, forms of media, you know. So I can definitely appreciate that. With that being said, maybe would you guys, as I said, I'm not really a gamer, but I know a lot of the listeners are, and I understand that this is a big crossover with metal culture. Maybe you guys could just take a minute and speak to the listeners for now and just talk a little bit about what video games you're into right now and what may have gone into influencing Slime Lord from like video, you know, video game culture. Maybe if there's anything even that's like a little unexpected or, you know, off the beaten path in that route.
I think a lot of it comes from the From Software, Dark Souls series, the Bloodborne, and Bloodborne, stuff like that. Just because, like, again, like, I'm pretty sure the first time me and Andy hung out, we played Dark Souls 3. So that you know, that says a lot about just, like, again, the relationship of our creativity together and stuff like that. But, definitely Dark Souls is up there. At least when it comes to...
In all those games, there's always a big swamp,
level
with giant rats.
The Slime Lord. but other than those games, just to get them out of the way is the obvious.
I'm going to get the album and look at my thanks list because I did put a bunch of games.
Yeah. I haven't played it, but I suppose for yourself, probably like The Last of Us.
Oh, The Last of Us,
I guess, with those creatures. I
That definitely inspired a couple of like really early Cryptic Shift songs with the disease and like infecting the flowers and like spores. So that interest has been there like a long time, definitely. So.
I guess as well, a lot of films growing up. I mean, Lord of the Rings. That was kind of like that. Those trilogy for films came out or like right at the right time for us guys and stuff like that growing up. So, I mean, like especially like when I was younger, kind of just having a like an interest in like you know like medieval and like medieval dark fantasy and all that kind of world kind of stuff. You know.
Yeah, I just remembered Elder Scrolls Oblivion. Came out like 2006, and it's not like modern anyway. It's quite old school, but it's not like a 2D side scroller. It's like a really nice midpoint between like gaming's lifespan, and that's just like an awesome like fantasy role playing. You can kind of go do all. You can go into there's an area in the south of the Oblivion called like Black Marsh. And it's pretty slime lord, and like if you go to like a village there, all the huts are all run down and grimy, and yeah, and another one is God of War as well, and just going through all those environments as like as Kratos, this guy who's in like ancient Greece, and he meets all the gods and like ends up like killing a lot of them, but a lot of those environments you go through are really fascinating, especially when you go into like Hades itself, and like you fall like beneath the earth, and all the realm is just horrible, and like red, there's like rivers of like flowing red, and then you meet like Charon, the boatman, and in a lot of the Slime Lord lyrics, there's elements of like ancient myths and legends. And like definitely playing God of War with all the ancient Greece stuff, that's definitely influenced it. There's a couple of like reference points for like ancient myth and Slime Lord lyrics.
All right, man. And so then what I was getting at before asking about your singer, having more of like a grounded in reality, and I guess you would say science understanding of ecology, it kind of gives all of that kind of far-reaching fantasy stuff you guys are talking about, and the idea of writing your own fantasy, a little bit of for lack of a better term, street cred. You know what I mean? It's like you guys kind of have a you have one foot on the ground with that in a way too. You know what I mean? Is that fair to say? Does he kind of like give you guys a little bit of like I mean, he titled the album, I guess you could say, right? But does he also have some sort of like check on the lyrics, or some sort of like inflection on the lyrics that way, where it's like these are some terms you could use. This is something I learned about. Does that happen frequently?
Yeah, I think in Beckoning Bell, that's where most of the terms are that are like directly related to chytridiomycosis, and like a lot of those words he picks up on. Like there's a bit just before the guitar solo halfway, there's like this back and forth that, because I do a couple of lyric lines, and there's like a back and forth with me and Andy, and I talk about how like the virus, because it's like super small in it, and imagining that this virus is attacking the cells of a frog or something, but in that like microbial realm, it's like an army besieging a fortress. So I'm using all this terminology, like trying to get through the keep, toppling the battlements, but then also throwing in these words that are to do with the virus itself, like the zoospores, like how it transmits itself and like spreads. And let me dig out what I exactly say.
Yeah, I can't
Yeah.
remember a lot of my lyrics on the spot too. I like.
Yeah, like this paragraph here, this like line, this is where the back and forth is. It's like fungal lineage of zoospores, fortress encircled, enraptured in symbiotic quest. Because these chytridiomycosis viruses create like a symbiotic relationship with the thing, the cell they're attacking, and then like the lineage of zoo spores, like the progeny of the disease. But then going into like these things are encircling the fortress, which is like the cell, and then the foul progeny breaching the fleshy portcullis. So it's like really linked to this ancient fantasy medieval stuff, but then throwing in, what if this disease is attacking the castle, which is like the cell of the animal itself?
Okay, that's what I was getting at before when I talked about, I think I worded it a little poorly myself, when I was asking you about, like, you know, with respect to historical literature and stuff, not so much that you guys are like literary aficionados yourselves, but just that there's this kind of take on fantasy, like the, you know, the medieval fantasy type of thing that's in there. So, now...
Yes, I think we definitely get caught up on just being excited about the lyrics and themes, and like once we finish the whole thing, it's like, it's kind of difficult to be like, oh, where did actually that come from? Because I kind of just feel like we're just being ourselves, you know?
Yeah, it all comes out in the mix. I kind of know what you mean. So you also, if I'm not mistaken, named the guitar solos throughout the album, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
That's something that I rarely see. I believe Trey from Morbid Angel used to do that, maybe still does that, but he might have done that on a few albums, but that's not really something you see quite often. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, we did it on the Cryptic album as well, and it was mostly, apart from it being like, oh shit, that's really cool, it was an opportunity to have some lyrics that didn't make it into being portrayed vocally. You could slip it in the guitar solo, and it's just a little like extra context of the song or where we are in the story and that.
Again, this is what I'm trying to illustrate to the listeners, is how in depth this is thematically and lyrically. And I like the idea that you guys have extra lyrics that don't make it into the vocals, so you put them on the like that. That infers to me that there's this like notebook with leaves spilling out of it, full of ideas, you know, which you guys probably have metaphorically in your heads, for the band, right?
Yeah, yeah, and I think a lot of it comes from, like you mentioned about literature, there's an art form to like words themselves. You know, like when you look at them, like calligraphy, and finding like a cool sounding and looking word, and then discovering that it has this like strange scientific meaning. That's like a really captivating thing for me. Like it grabs you visually, and then if you look it up, there's like a whole deeper level to it.
Yeah. And all right. So speaking of deeper levels, now, we talked a lot about the themes and all that sort of thing. I just talked about the guitar solos. I thought this might be a good point to transition a little bit and ask you about some of the gear and equipment used on the actual recording of this album. And I wanted to start that off by asking you, I mean, this was my reflection listening back to the Delta Death Sirens, Mass Contamination, Spells at the Isthmus, a live album. So respectfully, more of a band in the room feel by the nature of it. But is the difference with this full length album all in the production, the composition, the wall of sound type of thing? It's almost like the band putting on the suit and the whole nine, and, you know, and getting dressed up in a way, sonically. Am I right to imply that?
Yeah, I think that's right, bro. Like, you know, especially like we're heading in for that debut album, like vibe. We took a long time to do the Cryptic Shift first album because we wanted to make sure that we like got it right and that everything felt, you know, like deserved, and it wasn't necessarily like a rushed kind of project. And again, with Slime Lord, you know, like it was kind of a similar deal. Like the time felt right to do a record. We wrote it, we got the demos done. We sent forward, like, you know, we submitted the demos for the record to 20 But Spin quite early, to be honest. Like, it was pretty much like the first kind of like official run of like, okay, let's record these tracks in the practice room. we did that Dave took interest in, and that's real cool because obviously when that happened, it was like, all right, cool, you know, we got the label to support now, so you know, things can be possible and we can start thinking about like who we want to get for the artwork and like, you know, getting Brad together, you know, working with Brad Moore was incredible.
Yeah, and when you have like an EP of like three tracks, it's, you know, you kind of anything will work, even though like we wanted to make it cool anyway. But for the album, yeah, definitely. It was like, because when an album comes out, it's an eternal thing, you know, everyone, you know, we like worship these albums that came out like decades ago.
Decades before we were born, bro.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, and it's important because they're still around now. So yeah, putting together a full length, it's just got to be done right.
And again, it was cool. Like obviously, before like Slime Lord was quite, you know, we worked with smaller, more independent labels and stuff like that. And then again, having the opportunity to have the support from 20 Book Spin and stuff like that, it was real cool to like you say, be able to like actually really like make sure, like, you know, there was no longer like, not that before there was a compromise, but this time it was kind of like, oh, we can afford to work with Damien Herring and stuff like that and work with the people we wanted to work with and stuff. And it was real cool, man.
Yes, Damien of Horrendous.
That's right.
Let me not get too ahead of myself because I also asked you guys about gear prior to that. And of course, I always tell people, let's not spill the beans if you got, you know, your little secret pedal you don't want to talk about or whatever. But whatever you would like to share with the listeners about effects pedals and or, you know, or if some of it was done in the digital domain, I'll hand it over to you guys now, and also maybe, you know, some of the drums, anything you want to talk about gear wise that went into the recording of the album.
One thing that's come up a couple of times is like synths. Some people mention the synths are really great on this record, you know, but there's no synth. It's all just guitars and pedals. Like the extra layers are just like a reverb pedal, or there's one that's like one of my favorites, is it's called a Super Ego by Electro Harmonix. And that creates this like really, it can be like really otherworldly swelling of like the chord. So if you put like a clean tone on, put some chorus, put like a nice reverb on and some delay, but it's all coming, like the Super Ego feeds everything into those. It creates like a lot of those noises that I think people think are synths. Like at the end of Beckoning Bell, before the final bit of Gut Brain Axis, the start of Batrachomorpha Resurrection's Chamber, that's like the Super Ego sound that people probably think is like a synth. So like guitar pedals are a really big thing personally for me, because like coming from being into a lot of shoegaze stuff and like seeing shoegaze bands with just enormous pedal boards is like the coolest thing. Rather than having like a simple like stomp box, digital stomp box that you can just flick through digitally all these presets, I think there's like an art to like the circuitry and like combining all these pedals in different configurations, and that's like where a lot of the layers of like the wacky guitar sounds come from. And if for drums,
yeah, for me personally, I mean, it was the first time I got to use my Premier drum kit, which is like an old like British drum, like drum shell brand, and it's kind of cool. They're from like 1989, so they're older than me. And yeah, like they just, it's nice. It's an old kit, and it's got like a lot of the drummers out there, it's got like the super like big deep concert toms, and like I've got like just being able to have a nice setup, you know, I got a nice, like, the toms sound great, the low end's great, it's definitely the best drum kit I've ever played on, so, like, at least for me, being able to especially play the sound, the Slime Lord, like, style and sound on that kit, it was real nice, you know, because, like I say, it's, especially with, like, some of the deeper, like, 14, like, rack tom, one of my, that's, like, that thing I had to, like, some guy was like selling a kit, and he had that as part of the kit, and I had to get him to like, just let me have the one drum, bro. I don't want to buy a full drum kit just to have the one drum, because it was like, with it being an old kit, you kind of have to piece it together in a weird way. But no, it was pretty cool. It was nice. It's just like I said, nice. The studio we used, awesome room. It was nice just to be like happy with the drum sound from before the mixing, like stages and stuff like that. So that's kind of what I got to say about gear. I guess for the other guys, John played around with the five string. I'm not too sure if he had one at this point, but obviously like Slime Lord is a lower tuning than Cryptic Shift. So John,
and he has his like regular like thickness strings, but he just tunes them super low. So combined with like the fretless and like the thin strings, but on the low tuning, it makes it like super like floppy, and that's just the Slime Lord bass sound. Yeah. And John's got into pedals over the last couple of years, I think just by staring at my ginormous board over the years. So he's got a fair few pedals. So he's used like some delays and chorus and flanger.
It was nice. Yeah. It was nice seeing him like get himself like involved with that kind of stuff and just like creating new sounds. Like it was sweet, bro.
I've seen it infect bands where one guy has a couple of pedals and the next thing you know, everybody's got a pedal board at rehearsal with 10 things on it. But it's all good. You get some great sound. And speaking of that, Xander, if I'm not mistaken, you're in a band that you would describe as shoegaze in addition to Slime Lord and Cryptic Shift, no?
That's right, yeah. Last Victorian Death Squad.
I'm sorry, what is it again?
LVDS, Last Victorian Death Squad.
Last Victorian Death Squad. I'm going to admit, it didn't come up on Metal Archives, so I was scared to go outside of my bubble. No, I'm at a bit of a loss. I didn't have time to preview this band, but I wanted to give you the opportunity to discuss that a little bit and tell people where they can go check this out if they're interested.
Yeah, awesome. It's come up in interviews in the past, but it's only had a name check, so I guess for metalheads that are into this, this is like the first real mention of LVDS. But yeah, I do that band with my dad and my uncle. It's based in Latvia, because that's where my uncle lives. And
oh boy,
we just do it because we like old school alternative rock from like the 90s and like shoegaze bands like Ride and Sugar. And yeah, we just write songs and put out EPs, and we're planning on doing a full length like next, because we've just got an insane backlog of like 20 plus tunes. And the gist is, it's like really nice, well-written, like songwriting songs, like in the vein of, to put it generally, the vein of like Oasis. But we put on loads of horrible like guitar feedback noise, guitar pedal stuff and layers, and we just completely destroy the really beautiful song.
It sounds interesting. I definitely have to check it. I said, oh boy, because it sounds like we had enough of a story there between it being a family-oriented project and also an international project to go on a whole nother interview here, man. Maybe when you guys are ready to put some stuff out or do, you know, make the next move with that band, maybe you come on and tell the whole story. Maybe you bring the family on, man. That sounds like an interesting story. All right, so again, like, not to get too sidetracked on that, I encourage the listeners to check that out, and please keep us updated. If you know, if your dad or your uncle, you ever, you know, ever want to come back on the Heavy Hole podcast, I think you know where to drop a line. That being said, so the new album, as you mentioned, is on 20 bucks spin. I don't want to get into your pockets. I don't want to get in anyone's business, but what does it do for you to be working with a label like that? And what has it kind of opened up for the album? Has it been a learning experience? Maybe let's just get into that, being the first, album on 20 bucks spin and that sort of thing.
I think first of all, it's pretty cool. Like just for like 20 bucks spin to pick us up. I mean, like we're just like a small UK band, you know? So without 20 bucks spin, like definitely those guys, like being on that label helps us so much, because like just because they already have that fan base, and that's awesome. Like, you know, when the band first started, like, it was kind of like, oh, you know, 20 Buck Spin's probably the label that we want to work with more than any, just because of the bands on there at the time and stuff like that. And like, we're friends with, like, say, the guys in Void Ceremony and Ascended Dead and stuff like that. So it's kind of like, it's a nice label to, like, be at and be with. We feel very, like, at home. And Dave's awesome, you know. He's truly, like, understood us from the get-go. Like I say, we sent over the early demos, and he replied so fast and so confident. It was almost, it felt like he'd been sat waiting for us to email him or something like that. You know, like, it was just like, oh, cool, like, sweet. Like, there was no, like, we'll see. Because, you know, like, literally, like, we got together, recorded we did, like, a couple of run-throughs of the songs, and then we were like, hey, should we send it out? Like, you know.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how that came.
We were planning to send it out to, like, loads of labels in a few days, but you were just like, I'm just going to send it to 20 Buck.
Yeah, yeah. I had a good feeling on it, you know. And then, yeah, woke up the next day, he got back through the night. Cool, you know.
When it's nice for 20 Buck to have, like, UK representation as well. I think he has, like, one of the band, is it Ward?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
So that's really nice, especially to have, like, with Slime Lord being this, you know, old school resurgence death metal sound, and the UK is, it's getting there, but, you know, it's still pretty dead with regards.
It's picking, like, up though, like, especially in the last, like, the year or two. You know, it's nice to see, like, our friends, like, Vacuous. They've picked up a lot in the States, and that's quite nice. And his friends Atom, they did pretty good with their previous album and stuff. And it's cool because, like, we've known, like, some of those guys for, like, 10 years maybe, like, at least coming up to that. And it's just like, oh, shit, like, you know, we're no longer just, like...
Yeah, and then someone from outside the UK, like, thinking about, like, UK bands, you know, hopefully it's not anymore just, like, oh, Bolt Thrower, or... You know.
What do you think about what's going on in the UK right now, Will, bro?
Well, I think about you guys, obviously. You know, I don't. When I think about the UK right now, I think about London.
Yeah.
I think there's probably a lot more bands than I know of. I don't just immediately go to Bolt Thrower and the old Earache Records lineup.
That's good at least.
You know,
like, totally. Do you know the band Mithras?
Mithras,
the old band, Mithras, the old tag, Tech Death fast band.
I know the name. That's all right. You kind of caught me off guard here at the moment.
Ice cold, bro. Ice cold,
no,
bro.
I'm trying to think of UK bands like current, you know, bands that are doing their thing right now, and I'm like, I'm at a little bit of a loss right now, man. But it's just like, you know, that's just my memory. But when I think of the UK, I think it's probably like a lot of places now where there's people in their 20s. Finding out about death metal and doing interesting, like, you know, brutal and 90s style death metal. And I just kind of, like, it's this sea of bands that I'm trying to make myself aware of as things go by. You know, you guys are the first band from the UK that I've interviewed in a while now. I haven't been doing as many international interviews, to be perfectly honest. So, but no, I don't just think about Bolt Thrower. I think of it as, like, the same way a lot of places are having. There seems to be, like, this worldwide resurgence in death metal being popular, and I could see that. Well, because I looked it up, you guys are playing the Incineration Fest May 11th in London. I was looking at the lineup for that, so, like, that implies to me that there's a healthy young death metal scene there, and that bands can go there from other countries and tour, and at least if not hit the whole country, hit London and maybe a few big cities, right?
Yeah man, that's definitely right. Like, again, like you say, like, the whole, like, worldwide death metal resurgence thing that's been going on for the past, like, 5 years and stuff, that's definitely picking up over here a little bit more now. And that's real cool to see. And again, like, yeah, there's a lot of, like, young people, like, getting into this stuff. You know, we've just come out, like, the pandemic was a few years ago, but even then, like, you know. So it's since, definitely since the pandemic, things have definitely felt better, at least. From how we see it,
you're like, boom, the venue that we rehearse that here and there's shows and stuff. Before the pandemic, it was kind of like the same old lot. But then, like, give it a couple of years after the pandemic, everyone that comes, in addition to, like, the old people, it's all just brand new kids, which is pretty cool to see.
Yeah, man. I mean, I'm still, I feel like you still caught me off guard before. Like, I'm thinking of, like, Grave Miasma and Cruciamentum. But I feel like that makes Meek sound old. Just bringing those up as you, like, that's the next generation of only bringing up Bolt Thrower. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, for a long time, it was those, the two only bands that, like, you could mention, because that literally was it, you know?
Well, yeah, with respect to all those, because I listened to Grave Miasma, Cruciamentum, and Bolt Thrower, but it's kind of like, yeah, like, there's more bubbling under the surface, and there's more going on now if people are paying attention, I think we could say.
Yeah, definitely, like, no, definitely in, like, the last few years. Definitely with the I'll tell you what, Dry Cough Records, who we worked with for our first few releases and stuff, those guys have definitely, like, done something, like, you know, to... Dry Cough, like, has worked hard to help build things over here for sure.
Yeah,
I think that might be, like, maybe. Well, yeah, I don't know.
I think that's the most important turning point. It's the most important label in the UK of the last couple of years for death metal, for sure. Dry Cough.
Yeah, because before that, we were trying to start labels for death metal.
Yeah.
like self-releasing stuff,
and everything. Like, they're signing, like, people outside of London, which is great, because in a way, London's like a whole other country, you know, compared to the rest of, like, the UK. So,
well, shout
out to Andy at Dry Cough.
I wanted to ask you about that Dry Cough Records. I'm gonna I gotta check that out. So I wanted to ask you about that, though, because we did mention you're playing, just for the listeners over there, you're playing Incineration Fest on May 11th in London, and both bands are actually on that, if I'm not mistaken, Slime Lord and Cryptic Shift. Cheers to you guys on that. That's always a great feel when you got two projects and they can work together like that. But how, I may have asked you this in our prior interview, but refresh my memory. What kind of a trip is that for you guys to trek it out with your equipment and go play a show in London? How far of a trek is that? And is that normal for you, or is this kind of like, you know, because of the fest?
It's like as far as you have to go at all in England.
It's kind of like, well, how long does it take? Like, a 6-hour drive with a couple of breaks and stuff?
Yeah, it's like 4 if it's quick, but like it's 5 hours with like a couple of stops maybe.
But, you know, specifically for that festival, I mean, that's going to be a bit of a long haul of a day. I mean, we're going to have to get up super early and get down there to like sound check, because I think Slime Lord's headlining one of the stages. Mm. We got to like rent a van and get the equipment down there. But that's nothing really out the ordinary for, like, just getting about in the UK, because, you know, 5 hours driving through Texas is, like, nothing. But for us, that's like, oh, we're near the sea.
Yeah, because we're based in Leeds, which is conveniently placed, like, bang in the centre of the whole island. So if we go to play Edinburgh or Glasgow, it's about 5 hours. And if we go down south to play London or like Bristol, that's about 4 or 5 hours.
And what about like local shows? What are the local shows like for you guys?
They're pretty cool. They're pretty good. Like, at least in Leeds has been like pretty, we haven't played with Slime Lord since their records come out, but at least like every show we've done in Leeds with Slime Lord, to be honest, has been pretty good. I'm not going to lie. Like, and thankfully, like, we've been able to get on some decent support shows in Leeds, and I think that definitely helps. But yeah, it's cool. I mean, the death metal scene in Leeds is like, it's cool. There's a couple of bands now, which is sweet. But generally, like, again, with the UK being like small, like, I don't know what we would even consider, like, is Manchester local to us? Like,
I think
Leeds, or like, you know?
Yeah, occasionally we go out to Manchester, but that's usually for like a bigger show at like the Academy or Rebellion. If like a bigger touring band's coming through, like we saw, who was in there? Like Immolation played the Academy, or like Revocation. Like, we travel out of town for that. So Manchester's about an hour away.
Okay, man. I appreciate it, man. As I, you know, as I've said before, I could use a few geography lessons. So I'm always very interested to hear things like that from the guests. And you guys have been generous with your time. I just have a few more questions. We got to get into, if possible, please, the artwork by Brad Moore. There's obviously a lot to be said. If the listener of the podcast here hasn't, you should check it out already. But it's like bursting with color and detail. I know from my research from the other podcast, from the other interviews you guys have done recently, that there's kind of these goblins in there that reflect the storyline, and it's supposed to be inside of this amphibious deity, so to speak. Maybe I'll just let you guys take over on the process for the artwork. Did you give him the ideas? What was the back and forth like? How did you find Brad Moore and work with him? I know it's actually not your first time with him, right?
Well, like, regarding finding him, I mean, I don't know which specific record it will have been where he first caught his attention, but I mean, if you're a fan of, like, surrealism and just general, like, artwork, that's kind of, like, you know what, like, trippy, but also, like, you know, he does great, like, landscape pieces that are so deep, and again, like, that is kind of like what I suppose, like, you know, going for the whole overall vibe for the record. Again, it was like, I suppose, the Delta Death Sirens, that artwork, actually, that was like more of a used, like, an unused piece from, like, an earlier project that Xander had in the works that never actually, like, when, like, never, nothing came of it. So there was some artwork that was there, and it was like this, like, when we're looking at it, it feels like, like, this actually fits, you know, like, perfectly. And then the second artwork for Moss Contamination, we just found that artist on Instagram randomly. I think maybe he followed the band, or maybe he did an artwork for someone else and it caught our eye. And then again, he had this piece on his profile, and it was like, oh, that's pretty cool. Like, is anyone used that? And he was like, no. And, you know, we negotiated with him, and we used that for the Moss Contamination release. But it was nice for the full-length album.
To have, like, a full commission.
Yeah, like, picking the artist and, like I'm sure Xander will go into it in more depth, but, like, being able to, you know, work to a brief, and Brad, you know, he definitely took the time to listen to the music and try and digest, like, the world we were trying to create before, you know, even, you know, put any paint down on paper or anything like that, you know?
Yeah, I think it was a really well matched, like, pairing for him to work together. So initially, at the time we contacted him, I don't think, like, most of the lyrics were written. It was mostly, I think I had the story, like, done. In the album linear notes, there's, like, a story section with, like 11, 12, like, short paragraphs. And I think that's what he had to work with, which kind of, like, details the outline of the story in that. So he got that, but, like, some of the references I was giving him was, like, movie posters, like I mentioned, like 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, like the cover of The Forest of Doom, which is, like, this one of them fighting fantasy adventure books, and it's got this, like, forest in with this weird reptilian creature in a cloak. And another one was, like, the Beskinski or Adolf Schaller, who have done these, like, weird, like, alien landscapes, but not, like, really fantastical, more like a realistic scientific guess at what another world would look like based on, like, ecology and geology and, like, the environment. So that was, like, a big influence to also weave in with this wacky story some, like, scientific, like, solid elements. So yeah, he took the story elements and kind of just went wild. It wasn't, like, an extremely specific thing that we were looking for, but we gave him all the elements, and what he came back with was like perfect. You know, like I said, with all the crazy colors, you know, we didn't want just something that was like just pure brown. You know, he has all sorts of like bright oranges and blues, which like on paper, you're thinking that sounds a bit weird and dumb for a death metal band, but it works perfectly, I think. And with like the one of the main things about Slime Lord is it's just death metal, but with some weirdness and strangeness put in. And that's like the key element, how it's like, it's just death metal, but with a lot of weirdness. So like the artwork had to be extremely weird, and like just glancing at it, it had to be
like extreme.
Like what the hell is that? Yeah.
Again, like just with like witnessing the art coming together and stuff like that, it was a real nice process because like, you know, every time he'd send an update, there'd be like a little new area to kind of like zone in on and like kind of be like, what's going on over there? And you know, it was nice, man.
Yeah, and because we give him a general vibe to just go wild with, there was like four or five points that I was like, it'd be really cool if we could have this somewhere in the artwork, this somewhere. So like one thing was on the front cover underneath the tentacle guy, there's like a geothermal vent that's like spewing out this liquid or this like gas, which is from track four, the Resurrection's Chamber. And like the villain of the story is dropping in these ancient fossils, and then they get like burst back out of this vent, all like resurrected, and because these are like ancient amphibian life forms. So that was like an element that I was like, somewhere in the soup of weirdness, it'd be cool if we could have just a vent that has these amphibians like swimming around, and that's like the gist of like what the process was. It was really letting Brad go wild, and us being really excited seeing like you mentioned like what he's come up with this week in like the update. And but like if you go in close on the artwork, there's always something hiding in there that's like, oh, I can make that out, that's from like this song. Or like, oh, this is from that song. So which relates back to the idea of it coming from like old movie posters, like Sinbad, where he's like, over on the right of the poster, he's there with his sword, and maybe he's got the girl. But over on the right of the poster, like Sinbad's fighting the giant cyclops or something. And the full artwork's like a full spread that wraps around, and it's proper. This is insane.
it's a work of art for sure. That's kind of like the point. I was a little excited at the beginning of our discussion today because I was trying to make the point to the listener, and there was so much to discuss to make the point to the listener that you've really released with this album a total package, from the visual, from obviously the audio, the sonic angle, you know, which is, you know, you know any band's job, but then even the lyrical, you know, we talked about there was, you know, extra lyrics that you used for the guitar solos. I mean, everything, there's depth to this. This is like something I almost want to, my nephew's a little young, maybe I'll buy this for him as like his first album, and I'll kind of like sidestep it in there as a storybook. You know what I mean? Like, we'll see what we can do. But like, I just want to make the point that when people buy this physical media, they're really getting something more than some other bands might put out there. And there's a lot of thought and depth behind this. And it also speaks to the fact that you've been working with some of this material since 2019 and kind of slowly, to use a more American term, slow cooking it, in the barbecue pit, to perfection. So, and remind me again, help me out, guys, one more time, the correct pronunciation of your new album on 20 Bucks Spin.
Tridiomycosis relinquished. There you go.
Thank you very much, man, for not making me embarrass myself again with the Long Island pronunciation of things as I do on here. I think I'm looking through my notes here, man, and you guys have been very generous with your time. One last thing I want to talk about is Damien Herring and his Subterranean Watchtower Studios. That's Damien of Horrendous, another notable band who we've done an interview with in the past and have to get back on. But real quick, guys, just take me through working with him. I know he's been active in that regard behind the scenes for a while now, but just the same way you worked with Brad Moore, like going in, what were some of the things you told him about the album? And what was the experience like working with someone mixing and mastering the album who you couldn't actually stop by the studio and sit there with him for? Because that's usually my experience, is being in studio with the person. So what was that like, kind of being long distance doing that process?
Yeah, like I think the long distance thing was probably the only like setback that I could really say from the whole experience, just with like, you know, natural, like, you know, I think Damien was quite busy that year. Maybe he was touring and playing some shows. I'm not too familiar with what the actual, I can't remember what it was right now, but at least like, definitely, like you say, having to kind of like hear something and then give a recommendation or a suggestion as to where to go next with the mix, and then hope that the next time you hear it, it's gonna be like resolved, you know. But then at the same time, like, you know, 2 weeks might have passed by, your opinion might have changed, things grow, you know. And then it was like, you know, I think getting the process to like from the start to the complete product was a little long, given the circumstance of it being a long distance like mix and working relationship.
Yeah, like with all of our projects, I think we've always worked with someone local. Especially with Cryptic, with Slime Lord, we've always worked with Adam Rogers, whose studio's here at Boom. So that's always been like really
like
easy to just
quick.
To just communicate something that you want. But that was the biggest fear, was like, what's the long distance communication going to be like? Which was, well, like, fortunately it went pretty smooth with all of like the requests and like what actually came back. Cause like with the opportunity to work with Damien was similar to the opportunity to work with Brad. It was like, this is the guy we want, you know, like hopefully we'll be at a work with 20 Buck, and luckily we got to do that. So we got to work with Brad, which was fantastic. And we wanted to work with him for a reason, and the same reason for Damien, wanted to work with him because he has a real sound, you know. You can put on a record by him and it's like, that must be Damien Herring. He's got like a quality, and I could imagine like the Brad Moore piece, like the vibe of it, and I was like, that's it. And I could imagine the Damien Herring mix. It's like, oh, I think he'd be perfect for it. So yeah, he really came through.
It was quite nice like working with him as well, in like a more full capacity as well. Obviously he mastered the Cryptic Shift debut, so being able to like have him do the mix this time, that was quite nice, you know. It was nice to work with him on that level.
Yeah, and a lot of the points that we kind of went through it song by song, and as we went along, it just got smoother and smoother.
Yeah,
you know, like the first song took however long, but like by the end one, it was like real smooth process. And I think he got his head around what we were looking to do in this Slime Lord in the mix. And I think everything really did come together in the mix. That's like an enormous point. That was like a whole dimension upon itself, like equal to the artwork and the actual like compositions. Cause like I said, it's death metal. You know, we have two distorted guitars, drum, bass and vocals, but then there's the like guitar pedal layers. There's any extra layer of vocals. And then of course, like the field recording stuff to blend that in and make the listening experience a whole package itself. Like just like the lyrics with the solos and the deepness. And yeah, he did an incredible job. I think it sounds perfect for Slime Lord. So shout out to Damien here.
Yeah.
And one point to mention as well, yeah. Slime Lord prior to this didn't necessarily have a sound. You know, we put out a couple of EPs, but it wasn't like we have to sound like Slime Lord. It was quite open, similar to how we worked with Brad Moore. It was, you're going, like Damien or Brad, you're going to be sort of establishing the Slime Lord sound. So it wasn't like really restrained in that aspect.
Okay, man. Yeah, I mean, it just speaks again to the fact that, you know, you guys kind of didn't cut any corners with the album. It's, you know, the caliber of people you have working around it to make the whole final product happen, from the label to the cover artist to the one mixing and mastering it. A lot going on here, and I just want to close out now, reminding the listeners to go back and listen to our first interview with both of you from October 2020. Should be available wherever they're listening to this one. If they want a little bit more information on how you guys grew up, getting into metal, learning how to play your instruments, and the usual heavy hole line of questioning that we kind of left out of the beginning of this one, because we've had you guys on here before. And with that being said, is there anything else that I left out of this interview? Anything you want to touch on before I ask you guys to recommend some music?
I think we got everything pretty much covered pretty well, to be honest with you. Like, you know, I didn't like the Slime Lord record and stuff. Yeah.
Fair.
Yeah, it's all good.
All right.
Yeah. And like you said, there's a lot of layers to it. If you look at the artwork, and you look like past the tentacle guy and you look in the distance, there's like a whole other artwork behind the creature, you know? So there's a lot to like discover, and like on repeated listening, I think you can hear new layers with it, and you know, like re-listenability, that's really, really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely multiple listens required, and enjoyed with this one. And quickly also, Cryptic Shift fans, anything that you could tell them if they wanted to know what's going on, anything new, besides the fact that you are appearing at Incineration Fest in London, May 11th?
Yeah, man. We're going to be recording 5 tracks in the summer. So that's the second album's going to be
coming.
Hopefully, pretty soon. I'm looking forward to that.
Okay, and we also want to remind people that Slime Lord and Crypt Worm are going to be on the Oozing from the Netherworld European tour from June 27th.
Right.
From June 27th to July 14th this summer. Follow everybody on social media for further news. Right?
I guess that's right. I think the dates are going to come out pretty soon. I'm pretty sure Daniel at Killtown's got 2 or 3 shows left to book, and then think the full tour, like, yeah, it's going to be announced, it's going to be up there, it's going to be sweet.
Yeah, that'll be a real fun tour, because Joss, who plays guitar in Cryptic, he plays bass in Cryptworm, so it's going to be all of Cryptic Shift, all of Slime Lord, and the two other guys from Cryptworm just on tour, so that's going to be a fun one.
Beautiful, man. I wish you guys the best of luck with all of that. And I'm sure everybody listening to this podcast already follows Killtown bookings and all that. So they're going to be abreast of the latest developments on that tour. Before you guys go, please take a second, and I want each of you guys to just recommend something old and something new that you listen to for me and the listeners to check out. Any genre of music, any era, just something from back in the day and something a little more recent.
Did you prepare? Did I prepare? Every day I'm prepared, bro. go back, listen to... What should we go with today? We'll go with... I've been listening to a lot of Demolition Hammer again, to be honest. The first LP. It's pretty raw. It's pretty nice. I've got some newer headphones, and I can hear a little bit more of a punch in the drums. So I'm like, yeah, sweet, jamming out to Vinny Days all day again. So yeah, rest in peace, Vinny Days. As for modern stuff, I've been enjoying the new Tomb Mold record quite a lot. Have you been enjoying that, Will?
Yeah, great bit. Yeah. It's just funny because the last time we recorded something for the podcast, I was just talking about Tomb Mold. We Afterbirth was fortunate enough to play with them in New York recently. And really a great band live, to watch some of that material live and to watch the kind of growth of that band in terms of what they're, the type of stuff they're writing on the new album compared to their their older material, which I liked, but was a little more traditional, you know. But now, you know, now to see them kind of branching out is really interesting. Makes me wonder what's coming next, which is always good.
I agree. You know? It seems like they've opened their own floodgates now, and whatever, like you say, whatever comes next, I don't know what to expect.
Yeah.
So, that's real fun. Same with the next Void Ceremony release. I speak with Garrett from Void Ceremony quite a lot, and I'm looking forward to that. I know it's not out anytime soon, but if you're listening, you should prepare for that, because I think that's going to be ace. They're like one of my favorite bands right now.
Void Ceremony is a very interesting band. Speaking of stuff that requires a few listens.
Holy man.
Yeah, and I also say I in addition to liking Tomb Mold's music, I approve of their choice of attire on recent magazine covers.
Yeah.
As opposed to other people above 40 out there. I'll just leave it at that. Man, people have opinions on the internet nowadays, man. We were talking some shit I don't know if the episode's out yet, but we were supportive of Tomb Mold when a few other people were talking shit out there. It's all in good fun. But Xander, you're old and new pick. Did we get to that, or am I stoned?
No, right. My old pick is, I'm going with Birdland Darkness of Light, which is not the 90s alternative rock band of the same name. It is, I think it's 70s. It's like jazz fusion, but with like a little more like rock, jazz fusion rock element. And I found this LP while I was in Latvia in a record store. And initially, like, the name grabbed me because I was like, that's not Birdland from the 90s. It's like some, but I looked on the back and I was like, right, this is a jazz fusion record. So I like took it home like a week later, I listened to it and it blew me away. One of the best like jazz fusion listens I've ever had. Really cool. And then the new one, I'll go with another unexpected one, non-metal. There's fine. A new release by a guy called Florian T.M. Seisig with a Z. I'm not a connoisseur of any like kind of ambient music at all, but I do follow this one guy and he creates these really cool soundscapes. He's got a new record called Planet Inc. That's, I think it came out same day as Slime Lord. That's just out, and it's loads of just really, it's not like minimal ambient where it's just like a hum for an hour. It's like really like surreal, ever evolving, like weird organic sounds, and he puts it together in a way that's like slightly musical, but still in this weird like floaty ambient vibe. There you go.
Interesting. Okay, and what was the name of that artist again?
That's Florian T. M. Seisig.
Okay, and the other group was it Birdland?
Yeah, Birdland with Darkness of Light, and Florian T.M. Seisig, Planet Inc.
Okay, interesting story about Birdland. I found out that the singer of Hirax had a more traditional metal band named Phantasm back before he was in Hirax, because I bought the CD thinking it was the death metal band Phantasm from Wisconsin once. Similar predicaments, but I enjoyed both albums. And you just reminded me of something I failed to ask. I don't want to drag it out and keep you guys on too much longer, but you guys did your own field recordings. When you hear nature sounds on this new album, the geese in particular, because we have geese all over Long Island here right now too, it reminded me a little bit. But that's you, the two of you guys going out there and making your own field recordings when people hear this on the album, right?
Yeah, it's cool, man. I mean, it's not like us like going out with some expensive microphone and making sure. It's literally like there'll be parts. There's like one part where it was like we were sat in the van and the window was like kind of broke and it was just whistling. And I was like, "Hey, dude, have you heard this? This sounds evil, man. Like, get the phone out and like record it on the phone for a bit and then I send it to him. Next thing I know, it's on the record." I'm like, "Yeah, sweet, mate, you know."
Yeah, that's at the end of the Hissing Maw which was intended to be like the guy at the start of the album goes to the center of the earth, but then he comes back up to the surface during the end of Hissing Maw.
The Hissing Door.
So we recorded the Hissing Door for when he returns to the surface, and there's all these fumaroles which are like spewing out all this air and create this like horrid noise. So that's the Hissing Door for the Hissing Maw. And then yeah, like you mentioned, it's mostly when we're out walking or in nature or whatever, and it's like, oh, that's a cool noise. I've got to record that.
Yeah.
And I do that quite often anyway, but occasionally it's like, right, that one could fit Slime Lord. So like when the album was like compositionally done, because I had a lot of these sound files just laying around, I was like, right, where can I intersperse these sounds across the album to make it like even more like embedded in nature? And the idea of opening the album with the screaming geese was an idea I had for a while, because there's this Stanley Marsh is like a 50 minute walk from near me, and there's always a group of ducks and geese, and occasionally they just freak out, and it can be pretty terrifying, especially when like just before the riff comes in, there's one honk that's like really horrible. And then what other ones have we got? At the end of Gut Brain Axis, when we were on tour with Cryptic, we were in Germany. We were staying at the guys from
Cryptic Brood, right? The drummer.
Yeah, the drummer of Cryptic Brood. We were staying at their place. And they basically live in a swamp. And we were just hanging outside. The guys were like smoking or whatever, and the frogs were just going off.
Yeah.
Like really crazy. And it's this like bizarre noise, because there were like thousands of them just going off, and recorded that there. And I was like, right, that's going somewhere on Slime Lord record. But there's like even more like subtle ones, like just before the bass break in Tidal Slaughtermash, there's just a splash to like accent the crash cymbal, just as like the guitar's cut out. So it's just fun to think of where to put in these real sounds of nature throughout the album, you know?
I love the fact that in this library of ideas, it's not just rehearsal tapes and lyrics, it's also nature sounds. It all paints the bigger picture of the level of personality and ingenuity in the band, which is lacking from some other bands out there in the scene, and I think makes it stand apart. And I want to leave off with that and encourage people to check out Slime Lord and check out your new album on 20 Bucks Spin. Guys, any parting shots, parting words for followers of your music and listeners of the Heavy Hole podcast?
Oh, like, cheers for anyone who's checking this out. Cheers for supporting Slime Lord. Obviously, like, that's sweet. If you're in Europe, come and see us. If you're anywhere else in the world, we're doing our best to come and see you. Cheers. Thanks, Will. Like, thanks for having us, you know?
Yeah, man, likewise. We've got like more tapes from 2019 that will be made into songs for the next album. I don't know how long it's going to be, but
go digging in the crates.
Hopefully not too long till the next album. It's going to be created the same way, I think, with everything that we talked about, the same sort of things in mind. And thanks for everyone that's check Slime Lord out. We've had the most exposure ever, so it's real wild. And as we mentioned earlier, the next Cryptic Shift's coming soon. So
we'll be on the lookout, and you guys and your bandmates are always welcome on the Heavy Hole podcast. You know where to find me. Cheers, guys. Have a great weekend. All the best to you.
Yeah, you too, man. Nice. Cheers.
You want to go? Just get back into it?
Yeah, man. Let's riff a little bit.
All right, cool. All right, man. Tom, you're still here. Just for the listeners, we were concerned about you for a minute there. I was, it's Administrative Assistance Day.
That's a thing. That's a holiday.
All due respect, I thought of you.
Really?
Because there's no Podcast Engineers Day. So I was like, you assist me in the administration of this podcast every week, week after week.
Sure, yeah.
What I did was I bought you, if you remember, up north here, we have the lottery. We have the scratch-off tickets.
Yes.
We have seven. I bought you one for Administrative Assistance Day, but since you're no longer a New York resident, I'm going to do it, and we'll allegedly work out a deal.
Oh,
Yeah, man. So I'm gonna do this for a minute, man. Here, this is we're gambling. Are we allowed to gamble across state lines on a podcast?
Yeah, we can. This is no Mann Act or anything like that. We can gamble. In our respective dining places.
Okay, man. This is a win $1,000 a week for life. So technically, if you win, I'll be paying you to do the podcast $1,000 every episode for the rest of our lives.
We would split it. I'd be nice, you know.
You say that now. Hold on, man. I'm scratching them off one by one here.
You just delete all this. You win that $1,000 a week and delete it, and you just nuke my house.
This Zoom call is gonna be it's gonna be the next thing scratched out if this actually wins. Oh, Tom, I hate to tell you, but you're a two-time loser, buddy.
Ah, shit. I knew I was a loser, but thank you for the confirmation.
I'm showing.
Very good.
we still love you though, man. From the Heavy Hole Podcast, Tom. By the way, that didn't come out of the Patreon money. That came out of my own pocket.
Someone's ringing the doorbell again. Better go shoot myself.
Oh boy, don't scare me like that again.
We were kidding.
We were talking about all this, like, you know, bringing me in, mafia stuff, The Sopranos, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, hold on, there's someone at the door. That got weird real quick for me, man. I thought we were in season six already.
Bro, I don't even know. Like, I move so quick now. You know, I'm just constantly stacking things. I can't not answer the door.
You've been doing a lot of work stacking things around the crib over there, huh?
Oh, yeah, dude. Building fences, retaining walls. Today... I was building a gate for my fence, but the gate has a locking mechanism with a punch code on the outside and automatically closes after being opened. It's very complicated for a gate. It's basically the most deluxe version.
Like a spring?
It's got springs in the hinges, and the key punch thing was a pain in the ass to set up, but it's all good now. I have to get it done because I have an inspector coming by, I think, on Friday. And I have to do one more gate. I got two gates on the property, so I got to do one more. Oh, so many rules.
We don't worry about that type of thing in my neighborhood. but you remember Huntington Station?
I do. I remember it well.
Sunny Huntington Station. You found a pit bull there once. True story.
I did. Yes, she's still chilling.
Is she now? She didn't make the move, right? She's still in the area, right?
She's with my folks.
Okay, good.
She was really my dad's dog, you know. He adopted. Yeah. I found her, but he adopted her.
She's kind of like she's kind of a dad dog. My dog has similar energy.
How is your dog doing?
She's doing great. She's very energetic. She's like, I wasn't looking for that much energy. She's probably already added a few months to my life. I would hesitate to say years, but I'm walking more. Walking a lot more. Because of this dog. Yeah, it's okay, man. There's a I cursed at somebody in public. I was very angry the other day. They got me out of nowhere. You know what happens all the time? People leave their dogs off the leash even though they didn't train the dog to come back when it's cold.
Oh yeah, that sucks.
Constantly, like all the time. And they run up on my dog, and I got two dogs running up on my dog, and they're growling. So I was like, get your fucking dog. I was like, get your fucking dogs real quick, man. I turned into like John Joseph from the Cro-Mags real quick or something. It was weird, man.
Dude, I actually yelled at, I kind of yelled to myself the other day. I was outside. My neighbor has this yappy little beagle. I fucking hate that dog.
Whoa. Just, hate's a strong word for a dog, Tom.
Yeah, I hate it. It just doesn't stop. They let it outside, and it will just bark for 4 or 5 hours at a clip.
That poor dog.
Well, all right, I'm not going to blame the dog. I hate the dog. I'm taking it back.
I want to come down there and play with this dog.
So, me being like a violent expressionist of sorts, I was sitting there working on something, and I turned to Gab, and I said, I'm just going to fucking shoot that dog in the head. Whoa. And I think the guy heard me, because the dog has not been out.
Where you live now, that's bars.
Yeah.
Where you live now, you're spitting that real talk.
So yeah.
Watch out.
I mean, the neighbor, in all fairness, wants to be my friend so bad. He always wants to hang out.
Yeah, probably because he's worried you're going to shoot his dog.
Well, right? That just happened. That was
Tom. You want a beer? Tom, you want a beer? My dog's in the basement, locked up. Don't worry.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. I didn't want him to hear me or anything like that. I was just, you know, the same way you stub your toe and you say, "Oh, I'm going to cut my fucking foot off." You just say shit, and I think he heard me that time. And I did not want him to, but he did, I think he did. And I've not heard the dog so much, so that's nice.
Hey, sometimes you gotta break a couple eggs to make a bacon, egg, and cheese sandwich, huh? Can't take the boy out of Long Island or whatever they say. You need Justin down there with all this carpentry you're doing, man. He spent like a few years during COVID, like in a carpentry dojo of his own making.
I'm making my own dojo now, man.
Yeah.
I was fucking with a router for the first time today, like really spending time. I was making some cuts for my fence, so they saddled properly. Not the prettiest job, to be honest. It's the first time I used this particular router, but they got the job done.
Yeah, my carpentry jobs, my little fencing jobs and stuff around the house look like I did them to entertain real carpenters. It's terrible.
Like jokes, like you're doing, you know, there's like alt comedy and stuff, like Neil Hamburger. You're an alt carpenter.
Yeah, I'm an alt contractor. It's the product of my environment here on Long Island. So, Tom, I did hit you up on the fly for this framing of an episode, as we say in the behind the scenes talk. And I know you didn't have time to get at the music I sent your way. And give it a proper. I sent. It's like this afternoon, like an hour before the podcast. I'm like, Tom, check out this 7-minute complicated orchestral black metal song by a band on their 6th full length album from Macedonia. Don't worry, I'm going to get into it when we.
I like
time.
To take the recommendation seriously, so I'd rather just tell you up front. Didn't even get to it, man.
It was I who didn't take the recommendation seriously by not giving you the prep time, my good sir. But here, I'm going to flip it on you this way. What have you been listening to, Tom? What's going on over there?
Oh, well, you know, still hanging out with the Black Metal Book Club, all the fellas down there.
Oh, they're going to love that band I sent you, by the way. They're going to love that band.
Good. Yeah, I'll definitely share it. Actually, my buddy Zach, he sent me that Convulsing album after you shared that with me. So they got their ear to the death metal world, too.
Cody Drasser from Afterbirth shared that with me. That was that. I believe that's where I first became aware of that album.
Yeah, man, we're getting some good picks that come up. Actually, I think I'm gonna start running every third week of the month. I might be at a brewery running the death metal evening for third Monday. What did I say? Yeah, third Monday. Death metal evening. Extraordinaire. Come on down.
Is that like you're like DJing death metal music? Like what is
this?
I'm just
going to make a playlist and it plays and the people who own this brewery are pretty cool. It's called White Whale and they let us DJ whatever we want. So it's nice to keep like a theme. So I think I'll be doing that. I've been listening to the latest Wormhole album.
Those guys are nuts.
Yeah, that one's been good. I think it came out like late last year. Really great, solid. It's definitely a nice evolution of the last one. I highly recommend that. And what else have I been listening to? You know, man, listening to a lot of Children of Bodom recently.
You know, interesting. Not a band I'm altogether very familiar with. Obviously a big band that enjoys a big following. But I always associated them with that kind of like post death and black metal, kind of gothic, doomish, you know, wave of bands from the late 90s from Europe.
Yeah, there was definitely something adjacent there. I mean, to the gothic stuff, but they changed their image over time. I don't know. They just have their own sounds. I think they mastered a sound. Is that sound for everyone? Not really, but it's quality stuff. If you're into, like, as a guitar player, you can't help but kind of just attach yourself to it. So yeah, that's a big one I've been listening to a lot of Mayhem's Chimera, the most death metal of Mayhem albums.
I've heard that assessment of Mayhem's Chimera. Here's my thing, man. I was given a copy of Mystery Stom Satanis in high school. Mm. And I also read that Lords of Chaos book that came out when I was, so I was very impressionable. And after that, I didn't really give many of the Mayhem albums after that a proper listen. I kind of stayed in their old school era. As I'm also, you know, more of a death metal guy to begin with, you know, I kind of flirt with the black metal experience. But I've heard that Chimera is the one, quote unquote, for death metal guys.
Yeah, I think, and a lot of the like traditional black metal fans, if like the true cult kind of fellas, they're not really that into that one. But I think it's awesome. Blasphemer, who's, you know, plays in Or Noir, he was playing for that album. I think he did the two albums after too. But yeah, he like pushes it. He like, him and Hellhammer have this really cool chemistry about it. I talked about it on the show once, and I'm trying to rack my brain for things I've been visiting a lot. Oh, Severe Torture has new material out, and that sounds way more like their old school stuff. They had a couple albums, in the mid 2010s-ish that I didn't think were that great, but, they have a new... Let's see, what is the album called? They have two singles out, The Death of Everything and Torn from the Jaws of Death. If you like the old Severe Torture stuff, this is way more in that vein, so check that out.
All right. All right, Tom, keeping up on things. Yeah, Wormhole, a band we got to get back on the show eventually too, man. I like those guys. Last time I saw one of them, they had a funny sweatshirt on. That's all I'm going to say. I like those guys. I like that band. I support them. We got to talk to them. What else? Thank you very much to Slime Lord. Speaking of bands that are kind of stepping it up, doing the next level thing, we appreciate that conversation with them. Tom, I was in the same room with you when we last spoke to those guys, because those are also the gentlemen from Cryptic Shift, as you may remember.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, yeah.
See, I'm new to this. I'm doing my homework post. So
we had a little family reunion of sorts. Now Tom's in on the like we said, Tom's putting up fences. He moved out of state to an undisclosed location because things got too hot up here. I said I'm opening up the books and I booked a few interviews. Things went crazy. Now I'm just trying to sort it out. I hope Tom doesn't leave the room again. Other than that, you got some solid cuts. Children of Bodom, I'll check. You know, I got to run Children of Bodom by Rick. Rick's like more of like the expert with that stuff. Shout out to him. He was in the text today telling me he picked up tickets. I think he's going to see Insomnium. And there's a few other bands playing out
there.
Very
nice. What was it? A couple months ago when we were talking, Insomnium was a topic.
An interesting band whose catalog takes a little bit of patience. And I say that in terms of like it's music you really got to sift into, you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know if I'll end up there. I already got, May is crazy. Like this, tonight is the first night of like the April into May nuts series of, shows coming up. I got on my calendar. Today I got the Shakers joint with Groaning Wretch and all them bands. But you also got Queensryche coming up. And then once you get into May, it's like full swing out here because of this MDF season with all the bands crisscrossing, pitter-pattering across the United States. You know, you got Internal Suffering and Cenotaph and Malignancy and Immortal Suffering at Lucky 13's out there in Brooklyn, man. That's crazy, dude.
Oh, yeah. Man. That venue's so small and intimate. It's going to be packed.
It's going to be an intimate experience, all right, man. I
like
Cenotaph and Eternal. Cenotaph and Eternal, that's going to be nuts, man. Shakers has a lot of shows coming up, too, man. Gates of Hell and Vomit Forth are going to be a lot of Bowel Erosion and Fester Day from Japan coming up, man. A lot of great shows. False God's going to be back on Long Island. It's nuts out there, man. Shaker's Pub out there is really picking up a lot of the slack on Long Island this season. With the underground shows, man. So I'm looking forward to all that stuff. The thing though, this MDF season, people are getting, I think that's what it is. People get a little crazy and they like to have fun. I'm not even going to address these allegations that I'm out here smoking this, pineapple haze sativa, 25.14% THC, Tom.
This is something someone's been alleging against you, that you would smoke such a thing?
Whatever helps people sleep at night, man. But I think it's because MDF is coming up. Everybody gets a little nuts. I heard something about Big Will. He's smoking that pineapple haze. Yeah, I don't know. Whatever
I'm
you guys
confused,
like to
call. I swore that MDF was, like, done.
What's that?
I thought MDF was done.
They're having one more. Coming up, it's like in a few hours. It's like next month. They're having one more, dude.
No, I know, but I found that out like a few weeks ago. No, maybe a month ago, whatever. But I could have swore they ended it.
Hold on. My Uncle Frank just called it. Frank.
Yeah.
Frank, what's up?
Oh, yeah, what's going on?
I'm recording a podcast right now. What's up?
All right.
No, what's going on down in Maryland with them guys? You know, I used to go down to Maryland and go to the shows and go watch the bands play in Maryland?
Yeah.
They're still doing it. They're doing it one more time this year.
Oh, yeah?
But everybody, you got guys down there, they're spreading rumors about me smoking marijuana.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, they're telling people I'm smoking this pineapple haze down there because of the Maryland Death Fest. I don't know what it is. Everybody's getting excited.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, how you doing?
All right.
All right, I'll give you a call when I'm done, okay?
All right.
All right, be good, buddy. Yeah, my Uncle Frank checking in, man, on the check-in. All right. Yeah, I don't know, man. I just wanted to address that allegation real quick. Have fun down there in Maryland. I don't know what you're saying about the pineapple haze. I think that about does it, Tom. We got it in today. Wormhole, great band.
Yeah.
Shout to Slime Lord. We love you, buddy. We love both you guys. Thanks for checking in. And also check out our interview, like we said, from a few years ago with Cryptic Shift for a little bit more on those guys' backgrounds. And now that you got their trajectory in a weird, we kind of shifted time in an appropriate science fiction podcasting way. Tom, thank you. I know you got a lot going on over there. We appreciate your time. And I appreciate you, even though you're not like, it's not that you're an administrative assistant. It's that there's not like a podcasting engineer's day. So it's kind of like, it's like giving your, I'm trying to think of the right analogy that doesn't even make this more awkward. Happy podcasting engineer's day, Tom. We love you. I wish you won some money on that lottery ticket. That would have been good.
Yeah, me
too,
man. That would have been sweet. And thank you very much for wishing me a happy podcast engineer's day. I think about this day pretty much ever since I heard about it.
I've been thinking about it since day one. Let's wrap it up, man.